Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Assalamu alaikum, Bilal. Greetings to you in the audience.
Greetings to you, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Oh, doing well, brother, doing well.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking for the last week or so about the importance of African Americans depositing their monies into the black banks, and we are planning on bringing on a few of those black banks. Said they was going to be coming on and make an introduction and talk about African Americans depositing their monies into black-owned financial facilities. But we can't get away from natural disasters. And we know an expert working with us. As a matter of fact, she has an 8 o'clock show where she talks about nothing but preparations for natural disasters, but our business conversations about financial institutions and the importance of the importance of putting our monies in financial institutions so it could create a cash flow in our communities rather than a cash flow in other communities. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to still emphasize the importance of preparations for natural disasters. So we're going to wait on Dr. Aisha. She's who is unconcerned. I don't have to speak for her credentials. She's taught in every university out here about natural disasters and its preparations. Excuse me. But now she's with us permanently. In her retirement age, she decided to join us, and she will be coming on talking about the natural disasters and the preparations that we need to make. And of course, it's that time of year, Brother Aziz. By the way, Brother Aziz, we're gonna have an open mic. We're gonna have an open mic conversation. So, but we know we want to when she comes on, give her attention to. Her teachings and her telling us how to prepare for natural disasters and their upcoming. It's that time of year as to where there's going to be plenty of natural disasters that hopefully that we're going to have to confront. And being prepared and knowing how to prepare is good that we have such a professional to tell us and to guide us through. So I would give her about 10 or 15 more minutes, and she will probably be coming on. In the meantime, like I said, Brother Aziz, it's going to be an open mic. And I'm going to open the mics as soon as you make your general comments. I am going to open the mics and one can discuss, you know, disasters and what they're doing to prepare, or they could discuss whatever they wish to discuss. It's an open mic. And, of course, like I said, we always are open for the discussion of business. And if you have a business, this is a good time to let us know who you are. Let us know where you're located. We would love to do business with you. So we do a lot of business networking on this station. So, Brother Aziz, we will deal with your general comments. And I'm going to open the mics up. Like I said, and we got a couple hours of a general business community discussion. Brother Aziz.
Yes, brother. Thank you. There's a lot going on in the country today, especially with all these, you know, with this climate change that's taking place. Some parts of the country is snowing. Some parts of the country far north is in the high temperatures, and you wonder, how does this happen? How does up there where snow three states over from this Chicago or Maine or whatever, and the snowing here and there, 200 miles away, it's 80 degrees. We're getting, this climate change is unpredictable, even though a lot of the scientists say that, they can somewhat guesstimate what's going to happen, but I don't think they're able to do that, bro, at all. And as a matter of fact, climate change is something that, in preparation for climate change, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, we know that there are basic things that you prepare for when storms come in, depending on what type of living structure you live in. If you live in a trailer park or old house, then you should probably know ahead of time where the shelter to go to if you are going to, if you know a violent storm is coming, as well as people that have medical conditions. You should find out where a shelter is and go to there, because a lot of the shelters, they may have some medical staff there, or, you know, some people that are, you know, medically qualified to take care of people with certain medical conditions. Those are some of the things, you know, as well as having extra food, water, having your medicine in a place, having your paperwork, as we've been told, together to take with you in case when you come back your house has been destroyed. At least you have, you know, paperwork showing that you lived at this place. You got copies of your electric bill, your water bill, your mortgage, if you have a mortgage. And, you know, these things, you needed to get help from existing organizations out there that help people after disaster, especially FEMA. FEMA want to have some proof, because they'd be giving out nice sums of money to people to try to help them get back on their feet. You know, thousands of dollars. So before they give you this money, they want to be sure, you know, it's just some fly-by-night person to come up and say, I'm so-and-so and I live over here. You know, they say, prove who you are. You don't have any identification. They're going to tell you, well, we can't help you. And you may need a little more than just an ID card, some proof that you did have a house or where you were staying. You know, these are some of the basic things that people sometimes overlook, you know, when they're getting out of the house and the storm coming, hurricanes coming, as well as those that stay over and try to ride the storm out. Sometimes that's not the best thing to do, try to ride a storm out, because we've seen in a number of cases where people were rescued off the top of the roof of their homes. Well, we remember Katrina, and that was just Hurricane Katrina, that was just a total disaster for the nation to reflect on how the people in New Orleans were handled and treated. And actually, it was a military general that came down to New Orleans and really got things going in a direction that where it could help the people out, because other than that, the general population and the management down there for the city of New Orleans and all of that, they was not prepared for nothing like that. So, you know, this preparation for these natural disasters is going to have to come from, you know, on high as well as coming up from on low about preparation, because people we think that know and should be telling us about this, they don't know. But as you mentioned, Brother Bilal, Sister Aisha, she definitely is an expert on giving advice and the information that you need to know to prepare yourself for these upcoming violent disasters that may be coming our way. Fire, rain, water, wind, you know, these type of things happen, and they destroy a lot of homes, they destroy property. And when we say destroy property, they kill farm animals, kill animals. You know, when the storms are over, a lot of times the animals that died in this storm, they get to decay and the smell and, you know, drowning. And all these things are things that we have to be aware of when we say clean drinking water, food to have. Because a lot of the food, you may need to use water to cook it. And you don't want none of that dirty water that's going to be around after a storm. Primarily, when people go fishing a lot of times, right after a heavy rain, sometimes some of the conservation people will tell you, don't go fishing. And a lot of times the fish don't bite after a violent storm because bugs, trash, everything else is washed down into the water. Streams, the rivers, wherever. And when it's like that, you know, again, we're dealing with dirty, polluted water that's not fit for drinking or anything. And at some point, I don't even know if boiling the water is still safe to drink. They say it is, so, but if we prepare it, we don't have to worry about that stuff. On the onset, when you know that there's a chance of a storm coming, maybe a month out or more. Sometimes they just know the weathermen tell you what might be happening. That's the time to start preparing, because we see when a lot of storms come down in Florida and places like that, they head for the Home Depots or the Lowe's to go get plywood to board up windows and things like that so that flying debris or flying objects don't, break the glass and further damage their businesses or their homes. So there's a lot of things that we've got to learn about in preparing for natural disasters. Another one that really, really is, some of the people are never going to go back home, and that's all these fires that's taking place out in California and places out west where it's really, really dry. And according to the weatherman, this is something that's going to be happening again this year. It's going to be real dry. And we've already had some fires already getting started out west. And they think this is going to be a real big thing. And they say on the news this evening, they were talking about the air quality around the country. And they were dealing with a number of cities that are producing the kind of air pollution that, causes that whole city and area, the air quality to be poor. We know San Francisco, L.A., they have that smog or whatever pollution all throughout the year. And sometimes I remember one year, I think it was 1978, 79, something like that. Los Angeles had so much smog and fog in it to aircraft. It was only a couple of airlines that was able to fly in there, and one of them was airline TWA. And that was because TWA, as well as LA, had already set up this radar system that a pilot could put his plane on automatic pilot. And the automatic pilot following the radar could land the plane And once the plane had touched down, and that the pilot would take over and break it down, because visually the pilot could not see how to get through all that smog to land the aircraft. And that was one of the, most of the aircrafts of airports around the country, a great majority of them doesn't have this system available yet. So that is why when we have a lot of bad weather like that, that most of the aircraft are grounded, because they aircraft deal with visibility. And when you can't see more than a mile down from the air, it's not good. You won't be able to, like mountains. 1972, I believe, or something like that, 73, a TWA aircraft ran into a mountain outside Dulles Airport out in Virginia. And it was because of the fog and cloudiness, bad, and the pilot didn't go up high enough to go over the mountain and ran right into the side of a mountain. And the debris was scattered all over the hillside. And, you know, this is just one of the many things that we're dealing with when it comes to natural disasters. If it had been a clear day and it wasn't all that fog and pollution out there, the aircraft probably wouldn't have ran into that. So it's just not us taking precautions when we have natural disasters. People in the transportation industry, people out on the water that's on boats and ships and that, they all have certain things they got to worry about with this climate change. So what we need to do primarily is take care of our immediate area where we live in and find out what it is that we have to do, get with others or whatever, to prepare individually, as well as prepare as a community of people, because you may live somewhere where the nearest shelter is 30 or 40 miles away. So what do? Do you go there, or is there some safe place in the community where we live that's a pretty sturdy building or whatever where we can go and perhaps take shelter there and be in a safe place? But at the same time, we want to have food and water there, as well as, you know, first aid kits for people that, you know, may get injured in trying to get to the shelter and that. So it's a big task in that. I'm just talking about some of the things that we need to do in preparation, but not close to the many things that we need to do, especially once we have our expert come on and tell us about situation, tell us more about what we need to do. So, you know, this is some of the starting out of what I wanted to do, Brother Bilal. And hopefully we have a few of our guests that want to, you know, discuss this problem. Like you say, we've been so much talking about banking and our need to start investing in African-American banks once we identify who they are. And it just seemed like it's just a part of what we need to do, Gov, until we can get to where we want to be with that, having the bankers come on and let the people know what they can do for them. And of course, we know what we need to do for the banks. We need to deposit our funds in them so that they can operate better. But, yeah, that's where I wanted to start off, Brother Bilal. And,
all right, brother. Appreciate your general information. And like I said, we are going to open our mics up. Anyone who is listening to us will definitely be able to join our discussion. Our discussion this evening is, of course, is preparing for natural disasters, the preparations for disaster, and then how do you mitigate the disaster. And of course we will have I don't know the answer to all of those questions, because Brother Aziz, like you said, you give several events of disasters that have occurred, and we know that there's mm-hmm. going to be continuing disasters because of this new world, this new climax that we're living in, and look like that's coming to be the unknown. So to have those who have some expertise on at least what the federal government is doing and what the federal government requires when it comes to, because they're the ones that can mitigate the disaster. Because they're so big normally. So, again, our mics are open, and anyone who wants to share in our conversation until Sister Aisha comes on, our mics are open, and we welcome you to our discussion.
Good evening, Brother Blau. Good evening, Dad. How are you all this evening?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, great.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for all the other listeners. This is Sister Clanestra logging in to listen to this evening's topic. Climate change is something that we definitely need to address, especially in the African-American community. With me being in the technology sector, I'm not an expert. However, it's a general consensus that everyone should invest in a waterproof lockbox, and in that waterproof lockbox, they should make a copy of all very important papers, such as their will or even something as simple as a copy of your driver's license, because even if you have a driver's license on you, let's just say something happens and you get tangled up in water, or maybe something got stripped off of you and there were issues of fire, then it's destroyed. But one of the general consensus is to make sure that you have a waterproof as well as fireproof lockbox.
Very, very, very important. Very, you know, and like I said, Sister Aisha is going to be coming on soon. And these things we already have preparation disaster kits. She has these kits, and you're absolutely right. As far as waterproof and your important papers that you and your Brother Aziz, we were talking about earlier, very important papers, especially anything to do with the ownership of your home, your insurance policy of the house, or like you said, any of your important papers should be in a fireproof, waterproof container, and very important. And but like I said, when it comes to natural disasters and the preparations for natural disasters, I am a student. I am one who is totally learning. But we do know that there's preparation that you can make for the disaster, and then the recovery after the disaster. That's both is to be considered. Both would have to happen. if there is a disaster.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, I am, as far as disasters, you know, African Americans, I guess as far as one who can say they can deal more with a disaster than anyone else probably in this country. Because we've been living in a disaster, I guess, just about all of our being here.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't been nothing but one disaster right after another one. And even though we are making America the richest country in the world, from my income from when we was in the fields and from my income from industrialization, we're still making white Americans the richest peoples in the entire world. So you would think there would be some kind of relief from all of that money. Some residuals would fall back into our community. But you don't see anything.
Well, piggybacking on what you're saying, Brother Blau, that makes it even more important with these times of inclement weather that we keep track of all our belongings and all of our wealth, because that is just another time, once again, that the Caucasians of this country can steal our land, steal our homes, all because of the natural disaster, and we don't have anything that is in a fireproof and waterproof container because we don't have written documentation on us. So that's all more for us to make sure that we're prepared in the situation that may come our way.
And see, that's what tonight's discussion is all about, is sharing ideas with each other. And at the same time, like I said, we will have an expert to come on with us, because she's been teaching us now for at least the last year or so. And what she's been teaching is, I'm privileged to have this knowledge and this information. And I know we're privileged to have her when she comes on to be much more informative. But in the meantime, using our own good sense, we know that disasters are going to occur. And we know before the disaster occurs, and in this case we're talking natural, but there are unnatural disasters. And like I said, whether it's natural or unnatural, the African American knows more about surviving it than anyone else, because of the experiences that we have to go through trying to deal with both. So preparing for disaster release is our discussion this evening. And anyone who thinks they have any ideas on his preparation, we would gladly appreciate your comments and your participation. But our mics are open, so like I said, you can anywhere from always just cut right in and yes, sir, brother.
Yeah,
you don't have to wait for me to finish, but I interject.
Yeah, that's something I forgot to mention, the fact that we know that it took a good while for people to be reached down in New Orleans and that, and because of the intensity of these natural disasters happening now, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Administration, they've come out and said that they want us to prepare to be self-sufficient for at least 3 days.
Yeah.
3 days. That's how long it's going to take them to get to us now, perhaps. And it may be four. I'm not sure. I don't want to say something that Sister Aisha didn't say and I'm saying, but I think Sister Aisha might have said that they were going to raise the level up to 5 days.
I'll tell you what would be a good example, Isaiah, is the number of days we just saw last summer where folks was on top of the roof. And, everybody's floating around in boats. You see, I don't think we can count the number of days. The best
thing
you can do is just say, I know that I need to have preparations for a natural disaster. In other words, I need to live for at least so many days before I'm talking about I'm out of water. Amount of food,
right?
You know, and of course these are the essentials that I need to live. So those are the preparations, the immediate preparations. I think one should consider putting in that disaster container that we're talking about.
When I was saying about that 3 days, they also had an emergency kit that you put together, and they said that emergency kit, of course, I mentioned before, you have some perishable food, water, a flashlight, a portable battery operated radio or television. And batteries, period. Your medicines, of course, and some antibacterial hand wipes or a gel. First aid kit, of course, the one thing you need to survive in America, money, some seasonal clothing, some clothing
when
to
you
wear,
say money,
as well as...
When you say money, Aziz, we ain't talking about $100 bills. You're talking about small amounts
of
money.
Thank you. You're right, brother. That's right.
$5,
$10 bills. That's correct. That's right. That situation, they're not going to be changing big bills. And the other thing is some sanitation supplies. And that was one thing, Brother Bilal, I mentioned to you about when we was going on the Hajj and that
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Out there in the desert. You don't have nothing.
Yeah, you need some sanitation, some toilet paper, tissues, and some other, sanitary liquids that can clean up with.
Well, we ain't going to take them too deep into that desert, baby. You know, because we know what that man, that is, that's survival.
Yeah, the desert is something else. It's survival, right.
Yeah, so that's a perfect example, but you can only explain that example until one might not be able to take it.
Right, yeah. And the other thing is children, we have to prepare our children for this type of thing when it happens. Let them know about it ahead of time.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Indeed, they might be the only survivor.
Right.
It might be the only survivor.
How to make a call. Make sure your phone's charged up.
Yeah.
As well as And then, you know, some people have, you know, generators where they can run their generator and all that, but we just never know how it's gonna, you know, how these disasters are going to turn out. And I was mentioning, if you know it's going to be real terrible, close the house up and get the heck on out and get to the shelter, because that's what you may need to be in the first place, because the things can happen where it'll be out of your control. Trees fall on your house, you know, electrical fire, your place gets caught on fire. Tornadoes follow hurricanes and that too, so you can have powerful winds take your roof off, all kind of stuff. So just, you know, just being prepared for these natural disasters is a must, that, you know, that we not only we know as an adult, but we also have to inform our children about these things and things that they can be doing in order to help in that. And if something do happen, as you said, to the parents, the children will know what to do. They won't be able to go into this panic and nobody makes it out, you know. So this is a critical and a crucial thing. Matter of fact, I believe, I'm not sure, Sister Aisha told us that this FEMA has been working on this plan for a number of years, over 20 years. And the sad part about it, putting this information out there, the sad part about it, it's a small percentage of Americans that are actually prepared for this, a very small percent. I want to say less than 10% of Americans. It's a lower number than I'm giving, but less than 10% of Americans are prepared for these natural disasters. So as a government, if you've got a massive disaster over a big area, one, two, three states and all that, well, people just got to be realized that you're not going to get the help. The government is not like an octopus where they can just stretch out and, you know, one arm grab you over here and another one help you over there and another arm help you over there. They're not like that. They have to get mobile also. And dealing on the condition, your help don't come out when the storm's taking place. Your help comes to you after the storm has subsided, where they can get out to reach people, where they have the equipment, the vehicles and trucks to be able to go to these areas wherein we may not be able to drive because of the power lines down and things like that, wherein, you know, you could get electrocuted, as well as when power lines down and people are out walking in water, they don't know if a power line is down and they step on electrical wire or something like that in that water. Also, if you get in some water where the electricity is, it's gonna kill you. So all of these types of things, we you know, if we're not told about it and we're not aware of it, we could become a victim, as well as the many victims that we've had during these hurricanes and tornadoes and that. So preparation is almost 100% of what you need to do in order to survive a storm. You know, preparation, the rest of it is like, hey, you're in the right place, and then you just pray that it doesn't, you know, that you can make it through it, that you survive. But yeah, all the things we just discussed in that, so, and our listeners are listening to that, yeah, be sure to inform your children of what's happening. Right now, if they have violent storms that they know is coming into the area, a number of the schools will let the children out early. They'll call for school closing that day, get the children on home where they can be with their parents, and go other places, because in particular, schools are not designed to be a place for a disaster, for people to take to the disaster shelter, you know. But and most of all, the schools don't want the responsibility of trying to handle all those children in a disaster situation. It would be ultimate chaos and problematic. Very problematic. So, yeah, our children, we need to let them know when, you know, when things are going on like that. Most of them have cell phones in these schools nowadays or whatever. And a lot of them are told to put the cell phone in the lockers until they have a break or recess. they can go to it then, and then when recess is over, put it back in your locker and get in the classroom. But all, you know, you need all these means of communication and that in order to be in the right place, doing the right thing when we know a natural disaster is coming. So that's what I got to say for the moment, Brother Belial. Share this with some of the other folks that listen to have some questions, and maybe they want to add something too.
All right, we will go and close our mics, and there we go, and we're going to go and close our mics. But like I said, brothers and sisters, we open up our show tonight rather than talk, come open up in our business conversation. We open up by talking about natural disasters because we haven't spent enough time. We don't want to lose what we have learned so far as far as preparations for natural disasters. And so without going any further, I want to bring on, I think, Sister Aisha, are you with us yet?
Yes, Brother Belial, I am. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, very well.
Yes,
good.
We can hear you.
I just want to let the audience know tonight I'm suffering with a little laryngitis. You might not be able to hear me for very long.
No. And don't push yourself. If you feel like you can't be able to, don't discuss it any longer than you feel comfortable.
Well, thank you very much.
We don't want to, no.
Yeah.
But this is an extremely important topic. And as storms become more intense and more frequent, we have got to start thinking about pre-disaster, before the storm, preparedness. You can't become prepared after the storm. So preparedness is essential. It will address the questions that so many of our people in this society have concerning disasters. So within the last couple of weeks, I have been doing another independent poll asking people the question, are you prepared? And, of course, I talked to about 25 to 50 people. And of that, three said that they were. And then I asked the other question of those three, how prepared are you? And the answer was always, well, we started collecting food and storing food up in the house. That's the degree of preparedness. And those three individuals, at least they were conscious of it and somewhat aware. But it goes far beyond that. And we have got to start thinking of preparing ourselves, understanding the alert, listening for the sound, knowing what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. So we're in a stage now in this country, and we know the things that are going on in the world as far as preparedness and disasters. But our concentration at this time is in the United States, and this is a big territory for us to even think about working within communities, working within whole community concept of preparedness. And when I say whole community, I'm talking about establishing relationships with your neighbors, your clubs, people working together. This is how we survived during a period of segregation. we understood that we had to be self-sufficient because there were no services coming to our communities. I remember very clearly that I was 17 years old before there was a fire hydrant put in our community. When we had a fire, we might be able to call the city or the fire department. If they came, they came with a truck that had a big tank on it with water. Once that water was used up, they left, and the houses continued to burn. So they just burnt down. So we understand that we as a people must become self-sufficient once again, not just because we are no longer in a stage of segregation, but we have to do this for the entire nation. And this is what the last two generations know nothing about, because we have become so dependent on the services that our local government can bring to us. But that time is moving away. So we're going to have to get together with our neighbors. We're going to have to decide on how we're going to approach the disasters that's going to hit your neighborhood. And if anybody listening thinks that they will not be confronted with a natural disaster, you need to really rethink that. That scenario is not going to happen. So there are many things we can do. And what we'd like to do on this show is to ask our audience to start thinking about disasters, thinking about getting prepared before the disaster. Contact this radio show and ask for the people who can come in or via Zoom and train your club, train your community, your church-based community or your masjid. Train your congregation on how to be prepared, because it does take training. You have to go through many steps, but you're going to have to pay it, give it the time and the attention that's needed. And I've often said this, that FEMA reported in 2022, this is in 2022, the latter part of 2022, they reported that since 2013, preparedness has increased in America by only 2%. Now, that's a catastrophe right there. It says that people are not becoming conscious. I can't say that people are not aware, because they hear the things on the news, they know that storms are developing, but we have to go beyond just awareness. We have to go to the level of being consciously ready to take action. That's the first step. The second step of being prepared is having a plan of action. And that is really one of the steps that require the most involvement of your family, your neighbors. You're going to have a plan of action. If you have to evacuate, you need to have an idea of where you're going. How are you going to get there? Do you have any financial resources? Do you have the supplies you need? If the storm is coming from the southeast, you're going to have to know a little something about geography. And one person said to me recently, if the storm is coming from the southeast, she told me that her family will be going to New Jersey. And I said, well, why would you go to New Jersey? She said, because that's where our family lives. And the reality is, within the African-American community, many of our family members live in the north, in the eastern part of the U.S. But if a storm is coming south, headed southeast, you don't want to go to New Jersey. You want to go in the opposite direction. So there are lots and lots of information that we want to talk to community groups about when it comes to disasters and planning for disasters. And this is going to be incumbent upon the different communities. It doesn't matter what state you live in. You still have to have the same training. Every organization has to have basically the same training. So, yes, let us become more proactive and save our lives. That's what pre-disaster training teaches you, how to save your life and the life of your family members. So this is a serious issue, folks. So I'm going to stop, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, and anyone have some comments or would like to ask some questions, I will be happy to do so.
Our mics are open. We welcome your questions. You know, Sister Aisha, you was talking about, I was thinking in terms of when a disaster is coming, and you know the disaster is coming your way. We always considered thinking in terms of buckling in. I'm going to buckle in. But at the same time, if I can go northwest, or northeast, anywhere north of the storm. In other words, if I can transport myself away from the storm, I don't think many of us think in terms of leaving our home and going to a safer environment by transporting ourselves out of the area, even though you know you may be transporting yourself a couple hundred miles, you would still be out of the area of the oncoming storm.
Absolutely.
Before it's coming. So I think transportation and transporting is another, especially for those who can do it, who can afford it. You know, I can almost visualize having an SUV. You know, one of these little mobile type recreational vehicles. For these disasters, like they could be oncoming, but transporting, I think, is a good way of looking at things when you know a disaster is coming your way.
Well, that's crucial, absolutely.
Yeah. So
now, go ahead.
No, I thought about that just listening to you. just a second ago when you were talking about some of the many ways you would start preparing yourself for disaster, and rather than staying right there waiting on the disaster to come to me, I can get in now, if I can afford it, I can get in my vehicle, and especially if I got some kind of sports utility vehicle, as to where, you know, I can transport, and I don't even need to be in a hotel. That just might be ideal, especially for those who can afford it.
Well, unfortunately, people from the inner city, they have the most difficult time as far as evacuating, because many of them do not have vehicles. And so therefore, they find themselves having to shelter in place. Now, we know that the local government, part of the infrastructure plan of local government, is to provide some type of shelters. That's part of Health and Human Services. That's part of that component of the infrastructure. But there are not enough shelters in any city that we have identified and that FEMA has identified who can shelter an entire population of people. So, therefore, many people are being encouraged to evacuate. Get in your vehicle with all the supplies that you need and get out of harm's way. Leave the area. So if that does take place, then it will leave the people, like the many homeless people, many people who cannot evacuate because they are handicapped or for whatever reason, the use of the shelters. They will be the population that will use, that will put the infrastructure of police, EMS, the medical facilities. Those are the facilities that are at risk of collapsing during a natural disaster. Once,
you know,
those
facilities, I couldn't help but to think of Katrina when you was given that illustration of the facilities that should be available. But we know during Katrina, African Americans was actually, the police was keeping them away from natural facilities that they didn't want. They just kept for themselves.
Yeah. I heard that. But, you know, the people, I'm still in touch with people from Katrina. And many of the people that I'm in touch with were African-American business people who were my friends that I've known, had known for many years. And these were people who had a certain level of economic wealth. And they had homes and whatnot, and they were the professional people. And when they contact me now, my heart goes out and I want to cry for them. They have not been able to receive the level of compensation from the federal government for their properties. Even though some of them had flood insurance, they are now renters when they used to be homeowners and business people. Many of them have become both physically ill and emotionally ill or mental ill. They have been devastated their lives, their children. They don't have any generational wealth anymore to pass on. That is the state of what is happening to many people, especially from Katrina. And we know that's quite a few years ago. It takes a lifetime to recover. And it's not a beautiful picture. These are some of the people by the busload that were transported to Houston, Texas. The people in Houston welcomed them initially, but then after a few months, the people in Houston began to change their attitude because they saw the people coming in as burdens on their social service system. And they wanted the people out. They wanted them to have to leave Houston because of the negative attitude of the indigenous, the local people in Houston. So all of these are traumas that many people, hundreds of people, if not thousands, are still dealing with, trying to put their lives back together. And we know that pre-disaster planning mitigates a lot of the impact of the natural disaster because you know what you are going to do when the disaster strikes and you know how you're going to do it. It empowers you so you can help someone else.
Wow.
I was in a training. I had a training a couple of weeks ago. And I asked the question, how many of you have a few dollars that you have put aside just for situations like this? And hardly anyone had even thought about putting aside a few dollars. And then one person said, well, I think I have a couple of hundred dollars put aside. I have a couple of $100 bills.
All right.
But in the training, what you learn is if you're going to evacuate or during a time of a natural disaster, you need to have small bills. You need to have one, five, 10, maybe a 20. Because when you evacuate and you have to stop and get gas and whatnot, those little stores, they don't want your big bills. They want small bills, or they won't sell you what they have because the ATMs are offline. They don't want big bills, so have small bills that you can buy what you need at these little stores or even the big stores. They don't want your big bills. So this sounds simple, but this is very important to know. Very important to know. So we have a lot of work to do in America. And frankly, one of the biggest issues that we are having now as far as Summit Environmental Resources, we need to be training trainers. And we are having difficulty finding people who want to be trainers. And this is essential. We need hundreds, if not thousands, of trainers all over the country, people that we can bring in and train them with the module that we have on how to conduct pre-disaster training to get people knowledgeable and so people can start a plan on how we're going to come together as a community. So there's a lot of work to do. But I understand that we in America, we are so bombarded every day with so much stuff, so much stuff. And we just don't want to think about, oh, my goodness, let me deal with another catastrophe. But that's the reality of our life. So, Brother Bilal, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go right ahead.
No, go right ahead. No, go right ahead. It's your hour anyway.
Yes. So if anyone in our listening audience have any comments before I leave, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, it looks like my voice is saying I can't take any more. So I am going to have to leave early tonight. But
yes.
I would certainly like to entertain any questions that anyone in the audience might have.
And our mics are totally open to everyone. If you can hear me, then I am able now to hear you. So any questions or comments, we certainly welcome your questions or your comments.
Okay, if we have no questions, hopefully next week I should, hopefully, usually Longiatus only lasts maybe a week, maybe no more than two. And I should be back with you all next week. Brother Bilal, I will appreciate your call later. And so I thank you so much. And
thank you.
I'm going to call it a night. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And thank you.
We'll
talk soon.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am.
Yes, indeed.
So, and there you have it, brothers and sisters. Like I said, she's a FEMA. She's been working with FEMA for over 40 years. And she's taught throughout many different universities and what have you. But Sister Aisha, she's talking about a training that she and her staff put on, and once you complete our training sessions, now you're able to be a FEMA, to work for FEMA when it comes to mitigating natural disasters. These are disasters when it comes to a disaster area. FEMA, I understand, works in zones. And so one disaster area, you may have three or four different zones, and each one of those zones is a state. So you would be training. Your training would entail your working that particular zone or that many that are responsible for that many states. So you can see you and whoever you are putting your announcement in, because you're actually going to be getting grants from FEMA for you to do this work for FEMA. But you must be trained in order to do it, and that the training entails the language that FEMA uses when it comes to natural disaster and the paperwork or what have you to be put together. And in many cases, you are now mitigating the situation because the disaster has already occurred. So she will be back, and she'll have much more information on the training and what that training entails. But once you complete the training, you will be FEMA has positions, and like she was just saying, nationally, there's only 2% of those positions have been filled by FEMA, because only 2% have completed the training. So there's a big need for this training, and having these representatives that can fulfill, that can work for FEMA when it comes to helping the communities on recovering benefits from the federal government, because that's what you're learning to do. So she will be back, or you can get in touch with us by sending us an email, and that's the New Africa Business Association. I'm sorry, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. And that would be at nabassc@gmail.com. Again, nabassc@gmail.com. You can send us an email. And we will also welcome your emails for if you would like to be on our listeners' broadcast. The titles that we will be talking about on a weekly basis, you will receive this information days before we go on the air. You will know what we will be, our topic would be for the following program. So with that said, we, like I said, I'm not an expert with the disasters. Anyone who have any questions about disasters or disaster preparation, we will still entertain your questions and see if we can make a good discussion out of your questions. But I will go back and do what we do, and that is network marketing and business identification. That's what New Africa Black Belt Wall Street is all about. Business and business ideas. Ways that we can stimulate current businesses, or we can create new businesses, and hopefully we can do that, create new businesses by community joint investment. In other words, there's a business that we know we would like to physically start, then if it's a group of 10 of us, then just to simply come in with our deposits. And, you know, in this case, we're each putting up $10,000. And we're going to go ahead and start our business for $100,000 or less. And so, and I put it that way because it can be just that simple. There's what one of us would take some time to do as far as, I am going to open this particular business, a restaurant, a hospitality shop, or a beauty shop, or what have you, whatever type business that you might be considering going into, consider doing it with the partnership. And the partnership can be an LLC as to where you will incorporate your business. And all 10 of you will be owners or investors in the business. And now we're, the business is paying everybody rather than any one person saying, I am the owner or what have you. No, you're all 100% invested with each other. So many ways the 10 of you could start a business, and I say it pays to consider doing just that, because in the African American community there are no businesses, and as far as consumer spending, we spent more than $1.9 trillion in consumer spending in 2023, just a few months ago. So with that huge amount of money being spent in consumer spending, we need to put businesses in our community where that money can come back into our communities, and we can start being self-sufficient again the way it was during the time of the Black Belt Business District. We need to bring that independence back. We need to get away from this integrated stuff that has made another disaster for us, talking about natural disasters. That was one we stepped right into. But it's time to go back to our own communities creating our own cash flow, in which we create businesses. That's the only way you can create cash flow, is by creating businesses. And we need financial institutions to deposit our monies so our monies can grow by circulating and a community owning of being a vested in their own community. So as the community grow, you grow. Or as you grow, the community grow. It's all being what we all invested financially into financial growth. So it pays to put businesses in the African American communities, again, because there are no businesses in a community that is spending a huge amount of money. So give that African American community the product and the services that they will give you their money. But you have to earn that as a business person. But first and foremost, let's start the businesses. And so, brothers and sisters, that's where we're going. That's where we are at this moment. Again, our mics are open. Anyone who has any comments, especially about network marketing and create new businesses, and especially create new businesses, join. Our mics are open, and we welcome your comments.
Yes, Brother Aziz, Brother Bilal. I was going to say one of the things in Black businesses, what one of the things that we want to reach out to is like a lot of the money that others make off of our community is based on us just being ignorant, you know, just being ignorant to a whole lot of stuff. And one of the things is I noticed a lot of our athletes will go out and soon as they get in the, you know, get a contract, they'll go out and get $100,000 car. I was reading today that the sister, a young lady, Angel Reese, she's from over in Baltimore. You probably know her, played basketball. Got a contract, and she went out and bought $183,000 Mercedes SUV. Now, she already bought a Mercedes-Benz car earlier this year, maybe about 5 months ago. She bought that. So we're looking at over $300,000 or better that she spends just in vehicles. And, you know, you can't tell nobody how to, you know, spend their money, but I'm saying making bad, buying things that are, you know, of no value other than material, you know, material, because the Benzes, the cars, we know they don't keep prices. And you're the one with me when I bought my last car, you know, because you don't have a knowledge about that. And that's one of the things, you know, you share with me also. I mean, the prices drop tremendously when you buy a new vehicle and you want to go back and sell it or trade it in. But my point is, a lot of our youth are not investing their money in the right places. And I don't know whether it's ignorant of the situation. I just use that word ignorant. I don't know if they're ignorant about how to do things or not, but I know one thing. We got to keep continually reaching out to try to, you know, find a platform to attract these young ones on there, more of them, where they can listen to the things that they need to do and how to make sure that they're investing their money properly. I mean, we're not telling nobody don't go out and buy some things that you like to have. But when you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on cars and stuff like that, it's just whack. It's crazy, you know, because you go spend $100,000, you drive the car off the lot, now it's $20,000 less. I mean, who has $20,000 to go throw away like that? Maybe rich people do, but this is something that we like to put into the minds of our young African-American children, whether they're preteens or they're teenagers or adults that are moving along. We need to share that knowledge with them, get to them, let them know there's better ways of spending your money. And as you say, investing, getting together with other investment groups and invest your in tangible businesses that are going to be in your community. Because the IT world, the way the IT world is going around now, you know, it's being flooded and crowded. What's being neglected is a guy that knows how to lay bricks, guys that know how to do carpentry work, auto mechanic work, as well as, you know, jobs for sisters rather than IT. You know, for one thing, the medical industry is wide open. If that's what some of our young sisters would like to be involved in, it's wide open. Not saying that they're not. That's one of the things available, as opposed to the IT. But another thing that sisters could be involved in for sure, and it's like, I think I've gone to one African-American beauty supply shop in the metropolitan Washington area, and that's including Baltimore, too. I think I've gone to one African-American beauty supply shop that African-Americans were controlling it. All of the other ones that I've been to around in the metropolitan area, and I've been to a lot of them, they're run by foreigners, not Africans, but Indians, Filipinos. These people are selling us stuff to put in our hair, stuff, products to wash ourselves with, products to treat our skin. This is stuff that we should be doing. We should be doing. Somebody else going to tell us what we need for ourselves, and you're not one of us. And this is not being prejudiced or biased or anything. It's just a fact of what people do. One of the biggest things out there that I see African-Americans buying is not primarily us. It's a lot of the Africans. They're buying the skin lightener stuff. to lighten up their skin. I mean, you know, you look good as it is. Why you want to waste your money on something like that? This is a mindset that we're dealing with. And this is the mindset that we're trying to change when it comes to us getting together with other African Americans and investing in businesses together, watching these businesses grow. We may not look, and we shouldn't go into a business like that when we invest with other brothers and sisters, of wanting to think that we're going to get immediate returns on our money. We're going to get some returns, but we're hoping we're building something for the future, for our children, our grandchildren, their children. These are the type of businesses that we see that the slave masters been putting up for their children, Caucasians do. They just don't try to go on business just for themselves. And, of course, for the family, if they can, they want their son or daughter, a daughter or son to succeed them in the business because it provides for the family. It puts children into college. It allows them to go to college or wherever they want to go to further their education. Family, this is what family businesses do. And one of the places where we see this many times demonstrated right before our eyes is in the Asian community, the Chinese and the Koreans. You may go to their restaurant and these carry out.
Brother Isaac.
Papa saw them in the back cooking. And then they have a little kid right there on the cash register.
Yeah.
So, businesses, you know.
Brother Aziz.
Go ahead on, Brother Bilal.
No, and I'm sorry to just join, interjecting along with you. Like I said, our mics are open, so anyone else who wishes to come in, they can. But, you know, Brother Aziz, see, this is what I mean. Like, all of those ethnicities that you're saying that we're spending our monies and everybody is gaining and everybody's doing pretty good from the black,
yep.
Black folks spending their monies on them. But see, this is the example. This is the example I mean about taking the business, our business, to our own black communities. Get away from the communities that we have so-called been integrated into. Go back home and put your monies back into that community that is still being neglected, that is still have red lining going through
That's
it
right.
as to where you do not see businesses in those communities. The reasons you don't see business in the black communities is because black financial institutions, along with the federal government, have said that black communities are invaluable. They want to keep our communities invaluable so we wouldn't have equity in our lands and in our communities. They don't want us to have that equity. Because equities can grow, can create large amount of monies that you can take right from your own properties. So they don't want the black properties to be valued where it can have equities or even high equities. So so because of that, you don't see any commercial growth. That's what I'm saying to the black man. Man, that we've been out here some 65, some 70 or 80 years into this integration thing, we can see how we're being ripped off because of the huge amount of money we putting into the white banks is making white communities filthy rich. Are they selling our money? They selling our cash, and they're buying paper from the all kinds of white businesses. They're buying their papers, car dealerships, the department stores, you name it. From 9 to 5, they're selling our paper, our money, to paper, and it's all that paper is being bought and sold from white folks. So again, we need to have our own communities that's where our cash can flow through the black community, the black community, the communities where you were born, the communities that you migrated from in the 50s and all. Talking about you going north because, yes, you couldn't make monies in the South. So you were forced to go north. But those days are over with. The value now is back into the black communities before the black communities are taken from you. Because the same people that you're talking about that's taking your dollars right now, those people are going to eventually move into your black communities because that can make them self-sufficient. And and we've been saying for the longest time, we as African Americans own a life support, because if we don't start doing something to for ourselves, this disaster we're talking about, like I said, it doesn't have to be a natural disaster. It can be a financial disaster. And this financial disaster, we're causing that ourselves because we're simply giving away our money, trillions of dollars, and no return. No returns on our monies whatsoever, other than the fact you go in there and whatever you got, the balance of your account, that's what you can withdraw. But what about that huge amount of monies that our monies, the paper our monies is buying? That's where the monies has been made, and that's where the discrimination is going on, and it's making white folks filthy rich. When we started talking about putting businesses into the black communities, yes, that $180,000 that the sister paid for that Mercedes-Benz could have put at least 10 or maybe 15 members of her family in business. If he was thinking in terms about community.
Oh, excellent point of view, brother. Excellent point. Excellent point.
Still the point of view, if she was thinking in terms of community investment, but at the same time, I can't diminish. I can't diminish her business value because she's gone for now from college, and whatever her business values are, of which of course I don't know, but if she can put $180,000 into a car, her business values must be pretty good, considering. And if that's the case, that means that her values have gone up. And if her values has gone up, it's to where she can splurge $180,000. Hey, more power to the sister. As far as financial planning and putting together a financial portfolio, yes, I think I'm like you. I think you should. It's something that our young folks have a tendency to neglect until they think it's something that I can do later on in my career. I can now go ahead and get all the things I never had and spend up a high debt ceiling, and that high debt ceiling could be what could crush you down the road, especially if your values get diminished and your debt ceiling continued to grow. So you can see that having a financial portfolio would keep that from happening, because you're in management of your finance. And so that's my comments on that young lady, but at the same time, I'm glad she's having the success that she's having, but yes, it would be great if she could get with a financial advisor and start a financial portfolio for herself. And not only yourself, but your for businesses, business planning. That's what this is all about. That's what we, that's the message we're trying to convey, is even if you're not ready, if you don't have the investors, you don't have the 10 investors, each one of you putting up $10,000, then you can start planning for such events. Business planning.
Yeah.
I mean, many of you are in clubs and stuff. You say, this is my girl, this is my boy, this is my, you know, this is my person. You know, we all are boys, you know, we all are girls. And so I'm saying, if you have a group like that, why not make your group? Because a group of people, you have a certain power. A group of people can do much more than one person. And so if you got a group of people, then you have a, and you start talking about, we're going to start doing business planning. And that right there is an excellent start. So that's what we need in our communities, and that's what we don't have. You know, you have all kinds of planning going on in the communities. I heard anybody say anything in the black communities about, we got a business meeting going on. We're doing some business planning. Communities come to a business meet. But you should have that. And there's nothing wrong with having this as part of your church of programs, as to where it has nothing to do with your religious program. But you have to have community planning, and business should be a part of some of those plans. So again, our mics are still open, brothers and sisters. We network marketing, business identification, business comments, even something on natural disasters, if you care to comment. But our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Brother Blau, yes. This is Jesus' daughter again. I wanted to speak upon what you were talking about earlier about the sisters and brothers that end up getting into the sports industry or even entertainment, and then all of a sudden they start to go on a spending spree, which is a mistake. Now, most people consider purchasing real estate a safe investment, but even with some of these brothers and sisters, when they go into these neighborhoods like Calabasas or Beverly Hills, all of a sudden, as soon as they start falling upon hard times, the Caucasians will start playing this game, like all of a sudden their property isn't the value that it was when they purchased it or hasn't excelled in value. And then they try to, as you say, redline or devalue the property. I mean, all in all, I hate to say this. I don't hate to say it, but I do hate to say it. We just need to be to ourselves. That is why we have many of the problems that we have, because we're just trying to mix in with people that don't want us there, and nor do we need to be there. We were doing just fine before we mixed and integrated with these people. And we just need to learn how to be self-sufficient, self-supporting, and move on our own.
You're absolutely right, sister. That's why you go back to your back community. Go back to where you was born. That black community is where we left. Now go back there. Go back there, and because that's where you can still afford to put up anything you want to put up. The same old mansion that you had in Beverly Hills. Just think of you went back to your black communities where you was born. You can put up that same mansion. I mean, for rather than a $15 or $20 million, you can put it up for $1 million. So your mode of living don't have to change because you're going back home. All depends on how much money you're taking with you when you go back home, and how much of production you're gonna make in your black communities when you go back to their communities. But you're absolutely right. After about 80-some years of this integration stuff, it ain't bought us nothing but a financial disaster. The white man just bought us in, so because he knew we was his gold mine. We're his bank. That money in the look at the amount of money we put in this man's community. We don't have our money no more than about 4 hours after we get it. Used to be a sign of money stayed in the black communities for a period of 40 hours. Now it stays into our communities for a period of 4 hours or less before the black man has it. So yes, you're absolutely right. We need to.
And Brother Brown, it's a given that we are a powerhouse when it comes to our spending. This is a few years back. It might have been 5 or 6 years ago now. It was well before the pandemic. But in Atlanta, what they did is they staged a Walmart blockout. Where they are blackout, I should say, where they didn't go to Walmart for a 24-hour period. And I want to say that Walmart, or it might have been a weekend, but Walmart was so hurt, they lost tens of millions of dollars. Those few short days. So that goes to show you the spending power that our community has.
Indeed, so. Indeed, so.
That's right.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Absolutely powerful.
But again, it's, it's trying to get with like-minded people because, our people, when they see the example, they will jump on the bandwagon. But, they don't want to be, a lot of our people don't want to be the ones to initiate the process of going in the business together and not saying, you can't trust this person or that person. We do this, they do this, do that. That's stereotyping. We're falling into the stereotypical definition that others try to give our people. So that's one of the things, looking for like-minded people because just anybody in the community is not just going to be ready for that, But as Bilal said, people don't talk about just community meetings. From where I live, right around here in this neighborhood, these jokers have meetings. And I told my wife, I already know, even though we to know about what going on means. You know, my wife was going to one or two, and then there wasn't no need, you know. But anyway, I told her, you know, when we first moved in there, I am positive that a background check was done on me and everything. That's what they do in their community. They find out. It's just like we know that three houses down from us is a sexual offender, a racist. And some of the people said he did it, and some of the neighbors said he didn't. You know, so there's two sides to this. And their friends, the ones that said he didn't, are friends with him, neighbors with him and all that. The ones that said he didn't is on the other side of the street. So, you know, it's a matter of getting with like-minded people that want to do the same thing. And the only way you can find that out is we got to interact with people. And the biggest places where people, you can find people like that is like these religious institutions, people that belong to your church, your masjid, or you go to a temple, you call it a temple, but we know this is where you can find like-minded people. If the leadership was to promote that ideology to the people out there, give them that ideology. That's part of religion. For them, for the preacher, not to talk about God, when he's talking about God, he's talking about setting up to how community life is supposed to be run. And there's nothing odd about wanting to set up business with your brothers and your sisters or people that look like you. There's nothing wrong with that. We get to know other people. Yeah, we can be in business with other people. And that. We do that when we're successful in our communities and that. So, you know, for not to want to do that, it's like it's part of that mentality that came about from slavery. So we want, you know, we know that it's a month that we get with like-minded people, again, the church, the mosques, the synagogue, the temples, wherever our people go, the leadership there, again, should be telling the people, community, and we got a lot of black churches around, a lot, telling community. You see what's happening in our neighborhoods and that, that the businesses are not belonging to us. And, you know, this is nothing negative about telling as a minister or preacher or imam about telling your people about businesses in your community. This is part of, I was told by a friend of mine that he was told by another guy that Koreans, when they meet in church, you think it's all about church and all that. He said they come there and meet because that's the one place they can come and all, and they talk about business. They talk about business, getting into partnership with others. And now it all made sense to me, you know. It all made sense to me. Yeah, they're going to church. They say they're a little bit about that and all that, but they're talking about business and things that they can get in together. And we see that transforming before us as a people. Everywhere you live in America, you African-American, just a Korean or Asian or Indian that's got a business in your community, more than one. Everywhere you live in the country. Nobody lives in that. Nobody African-American lives in a total African-American community now where the businesses there are African-American. It don't have to be a thing of the past. It does not have to be a thing of the past whatsoever, but it's reaching out and networking with people outside of what we're doing on our show, but individually networking with people to tell them about a show like what we have now, a program that we have now that's promoting networking with people, like-minded people that want to establish business in our communities. Businesses that our children can be proud of.
I would like to add something to that. If there are any African-Americans out here that think Caucasians are their friends, I'd like to speak upon what you just said about the Koreans and Filipinos and just the Asian community as a whole. Now, of course, I've gone to many of the hair stores and so forth that they own. And one thing that I've noticed about them, I don't know why we are so forgiving and so willing to do business with Caucasians, Because one thing that I noticed, they'll never hire a Caucasian to work in their store. The only person that I see that they'll hire is either one of their own or African American. But they do not trust Caucasians in general. The only reason that they get, I guess, bound together with the Caucasian is that they see the opportunity to make money. But they never, ever let them infiltrate their community. They make sure of that. They stay tight-knit. And that's one of the problems that we have within the black community. And Brother Blau touched on this last week about the black banks being bought out because we don't stick together. We have to stick together. And those communities, they do stick together. They never, ever let someone infiltrate their community, i.e. their money. They keep their money at home with them. They don't give their money out to everyone else.
Okay.
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that's what makes our communication, our radio, Black Belt Wall Street. That's why it's so important we try to stay on the air and try to keep our communications, because even though some weeks we're going to have a large audience, some weeks we're going to have a medium-sized audience like we have tonight, but nevertheless, the importance is continuing to talk about what no one else is talking about. And that is the power of the African American dollar. And when I say no one, the African American community is not talking about it. It's the power of their own dollars and the power of the economical powers that we have in general. We are a very powerful people economically. But like I said, our money is to keep white folks wealthy, and it's been that way ever since they bought us here as slaves. It's systematically almost like a must to these white folks that we keep making money for them. Every time in our history, and we have shown in our history where we've had some real powerful economical successes. And you can start with the Black Belt and the Black Belt Business District that was put together by Dr. Booker T. Washington and those business associates of his that bought on all those universities and Tuskegee's and what have you that they built down in the South during those early ages. But at the same time, the Black Business Plan that was put together by the Greenwood Business District that was became famously known as Black Wall Street by the black communities of the Black Belt Business District. And of course, that business district expanded all the way from Texas throughout the entire South to include Maryland and Delaware, because that's where the highest concentration of slavery went on. And from the monies that we made for these folks when we was in the field working as slaves, made this country the wealthiest country in the world. now from the industrialization and making certain that we stay consumers and spend our money back to white folks again, it continues to make them the wealthiest folks in the world. When we show our financial independence, such as the times of Marcus Garvey, who was financed by the Black Belt Business District and bought on the giant economical empire that he bought on, even the country of Libya is am I pronouncing the country's name right, Brother Azim? Liberia.
Yeah.
The country of Liberia exists today from that financial success of Marcus Garvey. And then, of course, during those same times, you had the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That is the reason for Islam being a religious in this country today. And what, and during his time, those guys they call Black Muslims was all over this country, and doing for self was the way that those kind of, those communities was put together. And we had more businesses in the Black communities during the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad than during any other time in America's history. But during the times of many, many, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X's, and there were so many, the Cotton Clubs, and so many historical successes, but all of those successes we know was white disasters, the white man's jealousy, the white man's own admission to the reason that he killed our peoples and destroyed
our businesses
was
yeah.
because they was too independent. Businesses made them too independent. We had our own banks. We had our own everything. Like the sister was saying, before integration, we was totally self-sufficient. And that self-sufficiency is what these white folks who said that we showed that we was no longer inferior to them, made them inferior enough to show their white supremacy by murdering our people. So again, we will continue our call-ins and our radio station, and thanks to you guys. So until next week this time, we will be back. And we will continue the broadcast. Peace to you.
Great.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend?
and share with black folks not of kin. People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me with just...